Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus on Albany. I'm Cynthia Pooler, and my guest today is Ross Barkin. And Ross is here to discuss the Republican discontent with the IDC. They feel it's getting a little bit too large. So, hi, Ross. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you. So what's going on with the Republicans and the IDC?
Well, there are some reports that, the Republicans are growing a bit uneasy about the size of the Independent Democratic Conference, a breakaway conference of eight Democrats who are in a power-sharing agreement with the Senate Republicans who are in the majority. And it's the largest that the IDC has ever been for a long time. There were just four, then they added a fifth member, then they just added three more. So now it's an eight-member conference. It's certainly asserting itself, and traditionally they've always drawn the ire of the Senate Democrats because they keep the Senate Democrats in the minority. And I suppose now even the Senate Republicans feel that it's problematic that the IDC is getting too big maybe for its britches. Ultimately, I don't think there's much the Senate Republicans can do to pressure the IDC because the Senate Republicans need the IDC because without this breakaway conference, they wouldn't be able to have an actual majority. And of course, it gets a little more complicated than that. There's a Democrat who caucuses the Republicans. There's currently a vacancy among the Senate Democrats. A senator was just elected to the New York City Council, and that seat will be filled eventually. So technically right now there's an even division in registered Democrats and Republicans. So while I would say that maybe Jeff Klein's assertiveness is rubbing the Senate Republicans the wrong way, at the end of the day, they need the IDC, and they really have nowhere else to go because they can't form a power-sharing agreement with the Democrats. So that would make no sense for the Senate Republicans. So it's really IDC or bust for them.
Okay, so who do you think needs the IDC more? The mainstream Democrats or John Flanagan and his caucus, the Republicans?
Well, that's a great question, and it's the source of the IDC's power in Albany because both at this point need the IDC. You look at the Senate Democrats, and they could not form a majority, obviously, without aligning themselves with the IDC, having some sort of power-sharing agreement where maybe Klein would remain a co-majority leader. And for the Senate Republicans, while technically they are forming a majority without the IDC because they have a Democrat who defected, he caucuses with the Republicans, Simca Felder, Brooklyn.
Right.
The Senate Republicans have an extremely thin majority, and it's one that's probably imperiled. I mean, we'll see what happens in the midterms. Senate Republicans were able to draw very favorable district lines in 2012. So, you know, even Republicans in Democratic areas have always managed to hold on, but it'll be interesting to see with this anti-Trump backlash happening if that will affect the down ballot races, especially because many of the Senate Republicans support Trump. So, you know, we'll see how that goes, but the Republicans are always in a very slim majority, and it helps them to have the IDC as a cushion. So maybe the Senate Democrats need the IDC more because without the IDC, the Senate Democrats really could never form a majority, whereas the Republicans technically are able to. But I would say John Flanagan and the Republicans understand that their future in New York State really depends on keeping a power sharing alliance, then making sure they can draw favorable district lines again in the next redistricting in 2022.
When the IBC was formed, when Jeff Klein decided to do this, and at that point there were only four members, with Diane Savino, who obviously is paired with Jeff Klein, and what do you think he offered the breakaway Democrats at the very beginning to break away from the mainstream Democrats and be with him? And he knew that it would cause a lot of controversy. He must have said something very enticing for them to jump ship.
It's certainly probable. He probably explained the reality that if they were going to be able to guarantee themselves real power in the Senate, no matter what the alignment was, joining the IDC was the way to go. So at the time the IDC was formed, the Republicans had retaken the majority, and 2012 was coming up, and it was looking like the Democrats were going to pick up seats. And I think for the original IDC members, there was certainly a frustration of the Senate Democrats, who Jeff particularly didn't get along with and felt weren't perhaps doing their jobs. But I think more importantly, Jeff understood that if he was going to have power in any configuration, that forming this independent conference was the way to go. And I'm sure for Savino, Carlucci, and Valesky, the original members, they too saw that if they were sitting in a majority, that the Senate Republicans depended on, meaning that after the 2012 elections, the Senate Republicans were not able to form a majority without the IDC, that all of them could have committee chairmanships and larger staff budgets and the ability to push favored legislation, and they could have that in the Senate Democratic majority too. But of course, if you're four of a very large Senate Democrat majority, it's not as if the leadership owes you any particular favors. Whereas if you're a group of four and you're the reason the Senate Republicans can stay in power, the Senate Republicans owe you everything. So it was a good arrangement for them, for their own self-interest and for their own districts even. I'm sure Klein told them, look, this makes sense for your immediate future. And they agreed.
You know, it seems like it was a truly Machiavellian act on Klein's part. And since, you know, the mainstream Democrats are content to stay where they are and so forth, from what you understand, what made Klein decide to break away and say, you know, I'm going to start my own organization? Is he that much of an egotist, do you think? What was the reason behind it?
Well, there were a few. So first, I'll give the IDC explanation, which I think has some truth to it, but I'm also cynical about, is that they were frustrated with the chaos and dysfunction in the Senate Democratic Conference in 2009 and 2010. Which was true. There was a lot of dysfunction, and there were, breakaway Democrats then, and there was a lot of corruption. And, there's a brief period where the Senate was thrown into chaos, where Democrats were going over to the Republican side. So it was a very stormy two-year period. Of course, Klein is in the leadership with the Senate Democrats at that point, so I would argue that though he criticizes the dysfunction today, he probably will have to share in the blame somewhat. So there's definitely personal disagreements and bad blood going back to that time. I do think that the bigger reason was that Jeff Klein understood that as a white man from a fairly moderate Bronx district, he wasn't going to be the majority leader of the Senate Democrats. That they had been elevating other other lawmakers, African American lawmakers, because the conference is heavily non-white, and there wasn't really an opportunity for Jeff to really realize his ambitions. And once the IDC was formed, I'm sure he saw, because he's a very intelligent political strategist, he's maybe next to Andrew Cuomo the best one in Albany, and he saw that his path to power was making this breakaway conference. And so he's been correct so far. He's been able to be in the majority, be a co-leader of the Senate, be in the room to negotiate a $150 billion budget, which is something he could never do as one of the Senate Democrats. And even when he was leading a conference of four or five, he was in that room, with the Senate Majority Leader of the Republicans and the Speaker of the State Assembly and Andrew Cuomo hashing out a budget. So, of course, when you're in the room, you can really push for your priorities and you can help your district and also have a larger staff budget and enjoy the perks of controlling the process. So I'm sure when Jeff created this conference or looked ahead, he imagined a lot of this was possible, and he's been mostly proven correct.
Now, has there been a lot of pushback from Andrea Stewart Cousins and Mike Gennaris? What are their role in this whole thing?
There's been pushback. They've become more vocal this year. I had been critical of them in the past for really not maybe asserting themselves enough. I think for a while they were trying to appease the IDC in the hopes of forming a power-sharing agreement. There were primaries against two members of the IDC in 2014, Klein and Tony Avella, but ultimately those primary challengers did not receive backing, financial backing from Senate Democrats, because there had been an agreement put in place that, assuming the Democrats had a numerical majority, that come 2015, the IDC and the Democrats would be in the majority together. That never came to pass because the Republicans won too many seats. And so the IDC couldn't form that power sharing agreement and just continued their alliance with the Republicans. So, there's been a lot of criticism towards Stewart Cousins and Gennaris, some valid and some not. I do think in Gennaris's defense, and he's, the deputy and the guy in charge of the campaign arm, he's been pretty good at raising money for the Senate Democrats, all things being said, that they're no longer in debt. They are in the black. His record in terms of winning and losing races isn't great. There are a lot of swing races the Senate Democrats haven't pulled off, and there's an argument to be made that some of that blame goes to the Senate Democrats and their consultants, which I understand. And certainly Stewart Cousins maybe isn't the most dynamic minority leader, but the caveat would be here is that, one, the Senate Democrats are really playing on an unfair playing field because they don't have a united conference that's fighting Republicans tooth and nail. The IDC does not spend money to attack Republicans. The IDC, to my knowledge, has never spent any money in a swing race or general election to take out a member of the Republican Party. They mostly spend their time on primaries, either interfering in open primaries or even taking on members of the Senate Democrats. So you start off with that factor that the Senate Democrats don't have the benefit of a united body, and also that the governor does not help Senate Democrats. And I can imagine the governor's people, if they are listening, saying, well, Governor Cuomo endorsed this person, he campaigned for this person. But those endorsements, A, were few and far between, and B, the point isn't the endorsement, it's the money. And Andrew Cuomo ended his 2014 reelection bid sitting on millions of dollars unspent. And this was when the Senate Democrats were fighting very hard to try to get back in the majority, and none of this money was redirected their way. And Cuomo has rarely spent heavily or ever to help Senate Democrats. So that's another disadvantage they have. And of course, a lot of these down ballot races, for better and worse, are determined by the top of the ticket. And I do think the Senate Democratic strategy has to get better, because you can't just be relying on the Democratic nominee for president having a, you know, down ballot wave and driving turnout. You have to try to do things in off years, or try to figure out how to drive turnout without the top of the ticket. But Hillary Clinton, certainly in New York State last year, did Democrats no favors, and turnout was not what it was when Obama was president. Obama's two presidential years were extremely beneficial to Senate Democrats, and Hillary Clinton really had very limited coattails in New York State, despite her having represented us for, you know, so many years. And so you saw this in Congress as well, where every Republican incumbent won re-election, which is something that rarely, if ever, happens in a presidential year.
Now, you mentioned a couple minutes ago that Cuomo was sitting on a pile of money. And I think that's kind of having Republicans kind of throw in the towel the 2018, and that's why there's an effort to diminish Cuomo's stature on a national level. That they're totally not doing anything about 2018. They're going to concentrate on his national aspirations. Would you think that's a fair statement?
You're saying you think the Senate Republicans aren't going to fight hard in 2018 to protect their majority? Is that the
question? No, I think the Republicans are not going to put anybody up that strongly who will work to defeat Cuomo for governor. It's more or less they've conceded that he's going to be a shoo-in.
Oh, yeah. Ed Cox would say, no, we're fighting hard. And I do think they're going to have a primary and look for someone to take out Cuomo. But there's certainly recognition that New York State is a blue state, and it will be for the foreseeable future. And Republicans will have a very, very hard time winning statewide. They haven't done it since George Pataki was governor. And, you know, 2018 at this point is not looking to be a terribly friendly year for Republicans, assuming Trump remains very unpopular. So I do think Republicans are probably not very confident that they can defeat Andrew Cuomo. I think it's much more important for Republicans to keep their hold on the state Senate. That's really their last bastion of power in the state. And if they lose the state Senate, and if it stays lost, Republicans will really be powerless in our state. But as of now, they're quite powerful. I mean, controlling one chamber in the state legislature is enough to really water down or block a lot of the progressive legislation that could get through and end up on the governor's desk. So, you know, New York could look a lot like California if you had a Senate Democratic majority, but you don't. And so Senate Republicans understand that They are kind of that last line of conservatism, and that's really where the efforts and the money will be spent. You know, certainly the charter school lobby, you know, the financial industry, you know, the real estate industry, they understand that they need the Senate Republican majority, and they will spend handsomely to save it, whereas you know, the governor's race, Andrew Cuomo actually gobbles up most of the donations from those aforementioned industries. You know, certainly the charter and real estate and the hedge funders of the world all like Andrew Cuomo. So it's very hard for Republicans to run statewide because the donors that a Republican would rely on are actually Andrew Cuomo's donors.
Now, in 2014, Chris Christie, who was the head of the National Governors Association, did not do much for Rob Astorino. Have you heard or read anything? What about Chris Christie's future? He hasn't been mentioned lately in the news. What do you know about Chris Christie?
Well, the latest with Christie is that he's in line to be a sports talk show host at WFAN, a big sports talk radio station in New York City and in New Jersey and in the tri-state area. And in all seriousness, I think if he doesn't get anything in the White House, and he's probably not going to at this point, something to his liking, I think he would like to be White House chief of staff if Priebus was thrown overboard. But short of that, his future in Washington is non-existent, and his future in New Jersey politics obviously is over. So I would look for him to go into the private sector. He'd always practice law and make a lot of money that way. Maybe be a Fox News commentator perhaps, but he's actually in the running. There's a report recently that you know, he's a big sports fan, and you know, he is a very opinionated person. And I've heard him on sports talk radio many times. He actually, on work hours, will co-host a sports talk radio show in the morning. That could be an actual future for him, and it could be quite well-paying if he's given a, you know, prime-time afternoon slot. So we'll see what happens. You know, he doesn't have many options, but I think he'll try to remain in the public eye some way, somehow.
So from what you're saying, in 2018, the Republican candidate for governor will have a more friendly Republican for the head of the Republican National Governors Association.
It might make sure.
Right.
It's possible. Cuomo and Christie were very close. I would say I don't think the 2018 governor's race is going to be a priority for national Republicans. I doubt they're going to spend very much money against Andrew Cuomo. There are several pretty pivotal governor's races going on next year. You know, in states that are, you know, far more contested. So I wouldn't, even if you have a friendlier head of the Governors Association, I would be surprised if they invested any significant resources in New York State. There's an understanding that it's a Democratic state and it's very hard for Republicans to win statewide. And Andrew Cuomo, maybe in a primary, could be potentially vulnerable depending on the outcome of the Joe Prococo trial. But general election, you know, assuming he gets there, very hard to beat him.
Wow. That's interesting. So one more question, and it's about the IDC again. There's been a lot of protest groups bringing up protesting the IDC because of their alliance with the Republicans who are aligned with President Trump. what impact do you think these little protest groups are having on the state senate?
I'd say the biggest impact at the moment is you've stemmed the flow of defections from the Senate Democrats. I can't see another Senate Democrat jumping to the IDC after these protests. I mean, politicians don't like protests. They don't like rowdy town halls. They don't want this kind of grief. So I do think the protests have probably helped prevent more defections, and in the long term, we'll see if these protests turn into actual votes for strong candidates against IDC members. There are definitely IDC Democrats who could lose next year. It's not out of the question. I don't know how many would lose. I don't know who they would necessarily be. But certainly in New York City, you're seeing a lot of energy against the three new members of the IDC. So if these people show up and vote and there's a strong candidate, you could definitely see some changes in Albany.
Which group has the ability to raise more money, the mainstream Dems or the IDC?
Well, yeah, I mean, they're both I'd have to actually look at the campaign accounts and see who has more money. The Senate Democrats may benefit now from this atmosphere. They may be able to draw upon more small donors, maybe Bernie Sanders style, perhaps, if they really market themselves as, you know, this crusading progressive group fighting the IDC. At the same time, the IDC has been very good at fundraising. Jeff Klein's a very good fundraiser. So they won't be hurting for cash no matter what. So I think they'll both be able to raise significant hauls. I don't know who will end up with more.
Okay. Do you have any predictions on how the session, do you think it's going to be successful session for the people?
It's a great question. I don't know. I mean, Albany is very hard to predict, you know, what will make it through the 11th hour, what won't. We know it'll go down to the wire. There's talk of passing Raise the Age, that there's been a push there. It'll come down to, kind of liberal priorities the Senate Republicans will agree to pass. So last year it was minimum wage and paid family leave, and they, you know, cut a deal really on minimum wage. So the big union 1199 SEIU wouldn't support Senate Democrats in the fall election. So turned out to be a good deal for the Senate Republicans. So we'll see what sort of deal making mood they're in this year. What actual priorities make it through. There seems to be some movement around Raise the Age, pushing that up to 18. But we'll see what happens. I hesitate to really offer any solid predictions because Albany, like all politics, is not so easily so easily forecasted, we'll say.
Thank you. Thank you, Ross. In the final moments, give yourself a little pitch. Tell everybody what you do and who you write for.
Sure. So my name's Ross Barkin. I'm a journalist from New York City, and I live there. I'm a contributor to The Village Voice, and I write frequently on local and national politics for The Voice. I've also written for a wide variety of publications, mostly in politics, but not always. I've written for the New York Times, The Guardian, Esquire, New York Magazine, Columbia Journalism Review. I've done several op-ed columns for the Daily News. And I used to be a staff reporter at the New York Observer until last year. And now I freelance and write for many different places.
Thank you, Ross. And as the session evolves in Albany, I'm sure we'll talk again. Thanks for taking the time to be a focus in Albany. So
thank you for having me.
Thank you. If you like this show, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, download on your smartphone, subscribe to iTunes, and if you have a comment about this show, hashtag Focus on Albany. Have a great day, Ross, and thank you, everybody, for listening.